major NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country, sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
And now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former wide receiver Mike Pritchard. Let me remind you about Mike's background. He was born on Shaw Air Force Base in South Carolina, and he grew up in Las Vegas. Played his college ball at the University of Colorado, where he helped them to a share of the national championship back in 1990. And that season, Mike was voted as team MVP. He was inducted into Colorado's Hall of Fame in November of 2015. He was a first-round draft pick, the 13th overall selection by the Atlanta Falcons in 1991. And he played in the league from 91 to 1999 for the Falcons, Broncos, and Seahawks. Over the course of his career, he had 422 receptions for just under 5,200 yards, and he scored 26 touchdowns. And we are very honored he was back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Mike, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Hi, Mike. Hey, guys. How you guys doing tonight?
Nah, we're terrific. Fantastic. How have you been, Mike?
Oh, I've been awesome. Trying to stay warm. We have a cold front and,
no
and
doubt.
Snow coming soon, so just trying to stay a little warm.
No doubt. Mike, I want to get your thoughts. I know you're still out there in Colorado. I know they're near and dear to your heart, Broncos fans, and the time that you spend out there in Denver. I want to get your thoughts on the Broncos. What do you see from that team that they need to do in order to get themselves back into an opportunity to play in the playoffs next season?
Well, I think the Broncos just need to find the Broncos way again. I think they lost their way after they won the Super Bowl 50, which is easy to do. You think about the Broncos back then with the great Peyton Manning. They had the great DeMarcus Ware, Aqib Talib, just Von Miller in his prime. I mean, they just were loaded with so much talent. Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders. And so after winning the Super Bowl, the Broncos just didn't sustain it. They blamed themselves, though. They said that they got complacent. The great Peyton Manning retired, and they didn't have a quarterback. They didn't have an answer. They didn't have a direction. And so here we are going on 4 years later and three losing seasons in a row, and the Broncos are just trying to find their way again. John Elway's still calling the shots, and he's as frustrated as anybody. But they're working hard. I mean, I think they've drafted well the last couple of seasons. They're young on offense and certainly young on defense, but they have to get some premium players back on the roster. And once they do that, I think the Broncos will be back on top again.
And Mike, as a guy who played those seasons in Denver, you also played 4 years in Seattle at a time when the Seahawks were still in the AFC West. So when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl, are you rooting for them or are you rooting against them?
Well, I actually rooting for Kansas City because a good friend of mine is the offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy.
Oh yeah,
he is a guy that we got recruited to CU, Colorado University, at the same time. We were actually roommates and lifelong friends. And he's a guy who's a fierce competitor as a player, and certainly a fierce competitor as a coach. And I have that rooting interest going for me, even though the Chiefs, you know, we butted heads a few times. Certainly when I was a Bronco and when I was with Seattle, and I actually played them when I was in Atlanta too. Great teams always in Kansas City, but they haven't been to a Super Bowl for quite a while. And this year they have a quarterback that's special, and they have a great team around him. So I have a rooting interest with the Kansas City Chiefs this year.
So talk about Bieniemy. He's a guy that obviously has done great things as offensive coordinator there for the Chiefs. His name is starting to get mentioned for opportunities as a head coach. Talk about Eric, you know, maybe what you know about, you know, his offensive philosophy and how long, you know, what's the over under? When do you think Eric's going to be a head coach?
Well, you know, when you have a Super Bowl participant as an offensive coordinator of a team on your resume, I mean, that doesn't hurt. That's pretty good right there. I think of his counterpart. I mean, you think about Kyle Shanahan, who's now the head coach, though, at San Francisco. I think what helped him and gave him a leg up was when he was offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, even though they lost that Super Bowl. I think people started to view Kyle Shanahan as a head coach. And so I think that's going to happen for Eric. I don't know when his opportunity is going to come. Hopefully it'll come sooner than later, maybe perhaps even next year. But his business and in order at hand right now is to win the Super Bowl. But he's a fierce competitor. I think one of the things about Eric Bieniemy is he always wants to win. He always competes to win, and he'll do whatever it takes to win. And I think he recognizes the talent that he has offensively. And I think they'll call the game in accordance to that, in accordance to how their quarterback and how comfortable Patrick Mahomes is during the game, and making sure that he's making enough plays out there. So they are driven by Patrick Mahomes. They'll go as far as Patrick Mahomes will take them. I mean, if this guy is a special player, and if he has a great game, I believe Kansas City wins it. If he struggles, then that's going to be a difficult game, a difficult matchup for the Chiefs versus the 49ers.
Five questions for Mike.
Hey, Mike, it's always a lot of fun having you on, and I want to stay on the topic of your Colorado days. I was going to bring up Bieniemy's name, but you guys kind of covered it all. But as far as the success you had under Coach McCartney, you know, you had some good players like Bieniemy and Hagan and a lot of good players like yourself on that team. It was a lot of fun to watch. But McCartney, for that 5-6 year stretch, was one of the better coaches in America. Tell us about his strengths as a coach, Mike.
Oh, Bill McCartney, his strengths are numerous. you know, I think it was, so when I first got to see you in 87, Coach McCartney, he wore the headset. You know, he wanted to make sure that the coaches, were on point, I guess, offensively and defensively, just being in charge, and making sure the communication, was sound. But during the course of my time at CU, I think it was the next year even, Bill McCartney decided to take the headset off. He's gonna delegate. He's gonna let his offensive coaches coach offense. He's gonna let his defensive coaches coach the defense. And then he's gonna observe both units, but certainly observe the game. And interject, and when he needs to, and interfere with, he had to. But he was going to be one of those guys that sat back and observed the game, and could give his input or lead his knowledge when it's needed. So what I appreciate about Coach McCartney is figured out the game as it progressed. And he figured out the strategy of the game, like from our opponent. And he gave that information to the coaches, and he gave that information certainly to us as players. And that was so valuable. I think another attribute for Bill McCartney was the fact that he got to know each and every one of us as players and as people. And when you take the time to do that, when you invest that way, I think players will do anything for you. And so that's one of the things that Bill McCartney was able to do. He established that trust and that bond. And we trusted him equally. And when you're that talented, I think you'll get the results that you want. Certainly you're going to get coached harder like we were. But we responded because we certainly wanted to win enough games to win the championship.
And Mike, believe it or not, you're the third first-round draft pick we've had on the show tonight. And I don't know if Chris planned it that way, but that's hard to do, Chris. that's really impressive. But so I might as well stay on that same questioning I've been and talking about. First of all, for our listeners out there, the 91 draft, where Mike was a member, had guys like Alvin Harper and Herman Moore, Russell Maryland. That was a very good class also. But we talked about the previous two guests, Keith Millard and Burt Grossman, Mike, about the less fanfare of draft day back in those days. It's a lot different than it is now. But being a number one pick, it still was a special day for you. What do you remember about that, even though it may not have been publicized like it is today?
Oh, right. You know, that's when it was in New York in the ballroom still, I believe. And I actually was in my apartment in Boulder, Colorado. I woke up late. I wanted to get up early because I wanted to catch the entire draft. The Denver Broncos picked fourth that year. And we thought one of our very special players, very gifted players, Alfred Williams, All-American. We thought Denver Broncos were going to select him fourth overall. And I woke up late. And I missed it. And I asked my roommate when I went out to the front room, did Alfred go to Denver? And he says, no, they drafted Mike Kroll from Nebraska of all places. And my jaw dropped to the floor. I'm like, no, that couldn't happen. And I was so disappointed for Alfred. And So I'm watching the draft and, you know, kind of rubbing my eyes and making sure I'm awake. And then all of a sudden my phone starts to ring. And you know, by that time, they're around pick 7, pick 8. And in those days, you know, the first round or each pick was 15 minutes. So it was a marathon. And my phone started ringing. And so I picked it up and, you know, the team that came on, the first team that came on was, hey, this is Dallas Cowboys. Is Mike Pritchard available? I'm like, who is it? You know, somebody's pulling my leg. Somebody's messing with me. And I hung up the phone. And then it called back and it says, is Mike Pritchard available? I'm like, well, this is Mike. And no, this is Dallas Cowboys. We're thinking about drafting you in the first round of this draft. And I'm like, no way. Because at that point, my agent had told me I was a second round pick and I had a chance to be a high second round pick. And there is no way I thought I was going to go in the first round. And so I hang up the phone and I looked to my roommate and I said, you won't believe this. That was a Dallas Cowboys thinking about drafting me. And then the next call came in. It was the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're going to draft you in the first round. We hear that Dallas is interested. We hear that there's some other teams interested. And so make sure you're by the phone. I'm like, okay. At that point, I was starting to freeze. And then Atlanta called. And then a couple other teams called. And finally, my agent got through. Because in those days, and certainly for me as a college student, I couldn't afford call waiting anyway. So my agent had been trying to call, and he couldn't get through because the line was busy. So finally, he got through. And he's like, every call that you're receiving is real. You are in play. We don't know where you're going to get drafted yet, but there's like four teams that are interested in drafting you soon in this draft. And I'm like, oh my gosh, just panicking and my heart's racing. And then lo and behold, Atlanta gets through and it's Jerry Glanville and their front office that said, yeah, we're going to draft you 13th overall. You ready to be a Falcon? And I'm like, yes. Emphatically, yeah. That was a yes. I could not wait. And sure enough, I hung up the phone and I was able to hear my name announced on ESPN that here comes the 13th pick of the draft, Mike Pritchard to the Atlanta Falcons. And my world and my life instantly changed, and it was just a great time. Certainly, as you're leaving college and entering adulthood, if you will, and man, it was wildest that came true and just really changed the course of my life.
So, Mike, continuing with that thought, you know, I'm here in Atlanta. What was the fanfare like, you know, being the number one pick and coming to Atlanta? What was it like for you when you got into the city?
Well, you know, it was good. But so Bruce Pickens was the first. So Atlanta had two number one picks. They had Bruce Pickens third overall from Nebraska and then me 13th overall. And by the time I was selected, it was later on in the morning and entering the afternoon. And so by the time I got on a plane and flew to Atlanta, it was nighttime. So what had happened, they picked me up from the airport and took me straight to the news stations. And so I did the news stations. I did the hits on camera there. And then the next day, we didn't have the introduction to the media until the next day because it was so late. And then the next day I was introduced to the media and we took the questions there and the press conference there. So, I had time to take it all in. I'm flying first class for the first time and, you get driven around the city of Atlanta, which I love. And then got driven out to Suwanee. We were out Suwanee at that point and, we were in a Best Western hotel. And that was right next. It was right next to the facility right there in Suwanee. So I had to walk down to the facility the next day and answer questions from the media.
You mentioned Jerry Glanville was the head coach at the time. What was it like playing for Jerry?
Oh, Jerry was a blast. You know, I think we had too much fun. my rookie year, we go to the playoffs and we were a wild card team. And back then, I mean, we were in that tough division. We were in the division with the Saints and the 49ers, the Rams, and the Cardinals. And you know, beating the 49ers, we swept the 49ers that year. And certainly we split with the Saints and the Saints ended up winning the division. And we played them in the wild card game and beat them. And then we went to Washington and lost to Washington and went on to win the Super Bowl that year. But no, Glanville, I think his schemes and his defensive mindset would work today. I think he's that good of a coach defensively. We had June Jones as our offensive coordinator. We ran a run and shoot. I think the problem that we ran into there in Atlanta, though, is that we were too talented and we couldn't keep everybody. We lost Deion Sanders. We eventually lost Mike Haynes, and we lost Andre Risen. We lost myself and other guys, kind of Bob Woodfield. I mean, other guys kind of went separate ways, and that team kind of Deion Sanders, the team kind of just went awry. And Glanville lost job and June Jones took over. But for the 3 years I was there, I mean, it was probably a wild ride, full of ups and downs, but certainly enjoyed it.
And Mike, as you mentioned, you had a couple of opportunities over the course of your career to play in the postseason. You did that season with the Falcons, as you mentioned. You did later on in your career in 99 in Seattle. We always hear about how the game is faster, more intense. You know, the feel of a playoff game is, you know, to the next level from a regular season game. Did you feel it? Was it as, you know, people talk? Was it that much different?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the playoffs is completely different. I mean, I you know, regular season, you go through the regular season, you play a number of games, and you're playing hard. I mean, you're playing to win every game, and but you know that you got another game the next week. You get to the playoffs, and depending on if you're a wild card, if you're a divisional champion, or certainly if you have home field advantage, you have 3 to 2 games to win, and you're in the Super Bowl. And you know that as a player. And I think the Super Bowl is the epitome. Super Bowl is where everybody wants to get to you. And when you're that close and you can feel it and almost taste it, you do everything possible to try to win. And, you know, unfortunately for me, I think Washington, the 91 Redskins, they might have been the best Super Bowl team ever from what I can remember. And then certainly in Seattle, Coach Holmgren was our coach, and we lost about to go to overtime, I think, with Dan Marino, and he pulled out a miraculous comeback, and Dan Marino beat us there. So if I'm going to lose and not get to the Super Bowl, I mean, I lost to probably the best football team ever, and then the great Dan Marino. So I can live with that.
Mike, you know, being out there in the Mountain Time Zone, and forgive me for not remembering if you're in Denver now or still out in Las Vegas, but we've got the Raiders about to hit town there next year. Your thoughts on what you've been hearing about the excitement around having the Raiders in Las Vegas?
Oh, everybody's excited. You know, I think for Las Vegas, and first of all, being from Vegas, we never thought an NFL team would land in the city. For so long, the NFL was so against anything to do with Vegas. They didn't want to align themselves and certainly be mentioned in the same sentence with gaming, and that was to our detriment. You know, we rooted the NFL from afar. I mean, the closest teams, certainly you had the Rams and you had San Diego and you had the LA Raiders back in the day, but Denver was a big draw for us, and Arizona certainly. But now that the Raiders are in Vegas, I think it's going to revitalize the city. Just to see the dome being constructed, and thinking about all the great players from Raiders past through the Raiders present and then certainly into the Raiders future, it's going to be impactful for the city. The Raiders are already impacting the city from a charitable standpoint, and they're giving back to the community too already, which is awesome. And, you know, my high school, Rancho High School, just got a grant, a $250,000 grant from the Raiders for a new stadium and upgrades to the facilities. So it's going to be a tremendous influence and impact to the community. And a lot of people are looking forward to it. I mean, not only Las Vegas, but the state, because I think the Raiders will still have training camp near Napa or certainly in the northern part of Nevada, which will bring people and certainly maybe the Bay Area fans back. And then certainly during the year, they're going to play the games in Vegas. So just a tremendous opportunity. I believe the NFL has looked at it, reexamined. And you know, if the NFL wants to meet their goal, you know, they want to be a global league. Certainly having a team in a global city like the city of Las Vegas will help.
Bob, one more for Mike before we let him go.
Sure, Mike. I'm going to just go back to what you said about June Jones. I think his name has come up before when we've talked, and I just found him to be fascinating. Here's a guy that coached 35 years. I mean, he was in the pros. He went to colleges. He actually went back to high school a couple of years ago in Hawaii to be an offensive coordinator. Then he went back to Canada, this is after so much success at so many levels. But I'm one of those guys, Mike, I truly believe that certain guys are just born to be coordinators and not head coaches. And I think June Jones came under that guise. But as far as his offensive mind, I think everyone we talked to that had anything to deal with him always thought that this guy was an offensive genius. Your thoughts?
I believe you're right, 100%. June Jones, offensive genius. He didn't invent the run and shoot, Mouse Davis, but certainly he collaborated with Mouse Davis for a while. But impactful. I mean, you think about June Jones from the USFL when they had the, I think it was the Houston Gamblers. I want to say that was the franchise down there with Jim Kelly. And they ran the run and shoot, and then Jim Kelly brought the run and shoot up to Buffalo. And then certainly we had the run and shoot out there in Atlanta where June Jones played as a player. But yeah, tremendous offensive mind, not only for the pro game, but for the college game, the high school level too. The thing about June Jones is he never got upset. He was so poised and so calm, cool, and collected. And I think that's where his genius came through, because he never panicked. As a player, when you played for him, you never panicked. He was so creative with his play calling. You were excited to be a part of his offense because you knew you were going to score a lot of points. And that's what I can say about June. Now, as a head coach, yeah, maybe the temperament or the charisma that you need as a head coach wasn't always there because he was so poised and so scientific with what he did offensively. But as a coordinator, he was as good as it gets. And I was fortunate to play with some incredible coordinators, play callers. I mean, Mike Shanahan, Mike Holmgren, and people like that. And I would put June Jones right there with those guys.
Mike, before we let you go, remind our listeners what you're doing now and how they can stay up to date with you over social media.
Well, I'm freelancing. I'm still working with 104.3 The Fan in Denver, but I'm also collaborating with some stations out in Vegas. And we're doing some TV shows now too, locally, in Denver, Colorado or Las Vegas. But then also certainly, social media. You can find me at M.I. Pritchard. That's M.I.P.R.I.T.C.H.A.R.D. on Twitter. Certainly engage fans and any football fan that's out there. So that's where you can find me.
Mike, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of the show. We always have a lot of fun and always very insightful when you join us. So we can't thank you enough for being here tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you. My pleasure, guys. I love being on your show. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care, Mike. All the best to you and your family.
Yeah,
we'll catch
care.
Up soon.
Sounds
See
good,
Mike.
Guys.
Take care.
That's a great Mike Pritchard. And again, when you go back and you look over, you know, Mike's career in college and certainly being a part of a national championship team there in Colorado and the things that that he did over the course of his NFL career, Bob, you know, a guy that, for me, when he said, and I never knew that the Steelers had actually called him during the draft as an option, that he could have been, you know, with those Steeler teams of the 90s, boy, I would have loved to have seen Mike Pritchard in the black and gold.
As we said earlier, Chris, this guy has caught over 400 passes in the league and always played maybe kind of a second fiddle to some other guys, but this is a guy in his final year with Seattle was over 14 yards per catch. But yeah, very impressive career, and my goodness, played with some greats and played under some greats, and some of the names he brought up as far as coordinators and everything else. That's all football royalty, but he's a total class act on top of it all, Chris.
All right, folks. When Bob and I come back, we'll be turning on our Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive. Hear two more great stories about guys out there doing great things in their communities, and then we're going to wrap up tonight's show. We'll do that on the other side of this real quick break.